are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me why your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity. Because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope you are well today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, need do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if you didn't have to do it, and even if the weather was accommodating, you stayed indoors. But if you did go out, you were protected. You wore a mask. You wore gloves. You were protected. Because regardless of all they're talking about and reopening this, that, or the other, none of them fit the criteria for them to reopen. And you will see more people dying. You will see definitely more people being infected. In fact, we really don't know how many people have this virus because of the lack of testing. You know, you kind of hate that the government, but then again, when you are aware, you know the government lies, and particularly you know the person that is head of the government, Trump. You know he lies. There ain't a damn thing he can say. And so this morning, as I was watching the national news, talking about possibly a vaccine being developed, possibly by the fall, September, October. And the question asked, should everybody get it? And the question was, yes, everybody should get the vaccine. I'm not getting the vaccine. Let me say this to you unequivocally, without stuttering or fear of retaliation or trepidation. I do not trust this system. I do not trust Caucasian people. This distrust is based on history. As Malcolm said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. And some people say, well, that was then. No, then, now, and even tomorrow, if we don't change, they'll maintain. In fact, that's what the topic of the day is, miseducation, the intent. The continuation of miseducation. And many times it's us that are involved. Some unknowingly, some willfully. Some because the mental makeup that we have. But let me just finish this introduction so we can get on with the conversation. So this is African Perspective. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can, and I'm saying that with confidence, you can go to timeforanawakening.com, go to podcasts, click on African Perspectives, and there will be programs that you can listen to. Previous report programs that are dated and titled.
And surprisingly, people do. I tell you, I was kind of surprised. Because, I mean, when you don't, I've been getting a lot of calls lately, and that's great. Getting calls, people just calling to listen, all of those things are great, you know. Let you know that when you're on this mic, you know, especially because of what I'm talking about. And because I'm holding hard to dealing with independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. So I ain't talking no bull, you know. And having the mantra or the motto of Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die, is serious. It's serious. There is no compromise. There is no wiggle room. It is that, or there is nothing. So, other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The times are going to give our Eastern times. Right after this program on Monday and Wednesdays, the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, public affairs programming with Brother Wahad out of Philadelphia. After that, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey tonight. Tomorrow, Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. This Saturday, I wanted to listen to him, but he was having problems with getting on one of the components that you need to help you get on, and it wasn't happening for him. So, but he'll be back. Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. Saturday, Black Reality Think Tank, Weekend Edition. Black Reality Think Tank, Weekend Edition from 4 to 6. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Go online and check out all the products that they have. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Brother Mamani Tayemba, please go on to his website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see video pictures, if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomonti. If you want to see videos, go to YouTube.com/Bomonti2007. And if you want to check out the website, go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Everything you need to know. All the information, all the paperwork, all the downloads is right there for you to take a trip of a lifetime. Once again, the next scheduled trip is the South African tour, November 20th through the 30th. November 20th through the 30th. Then after that, it's Ghana. Going to Ghana, December 24th to January 5th. December 24th to January 5th. And then next year, April 2nd through the 12th, going to Senegal and Gambia. So check with Brother Bomani. Give him a call at 404-931-9429. 931-9429. Africa for the Africans. Brother Renoko Rashidi. Brother Renoko, his trip is October. That looks like that could happen. Early October, going to Gambia and Senegal and, going to Uganda and Senegal. Uganda and You know what I need to do, brothers and sisters? I need to read, right? Going to Uganda and Rwanda. Going to Uganda and Rwanda. Boy, Rwanda, I would love to see. In fact, brothers and sisters, go online to Dr. Rinoko. Look at the beautiful photos and a lot more that he has on there and all the information that you need for this trip. October 5th through the 16th, Uganda and Rwanda. And then October 22nd through November 4th, South, going to Egypt, going to Kemet. October 22nd through the 4th, going to Kemet. Habesha Incorporated.org. Go online to HabeshaIncorporated.org and check out, because these brothers and sisters, they are doing the work. They are building the Kashi Village in Ghana. Here stateside, they have the Habesha Works program, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers. They're doing the work, you know, and they deserve to be supported. They deserve to be supported. They were looking for $250,000. They still only have $125,000. They deserve to be supported. So, HabeshaIncorporated.org. HabeshaIncorporated.org. The shrine is still closed. The Medu bookstore, Mama Nia, they're still not happening. Brother Kazimde Ajamu, the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, is still happening. They're open. Number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. They got books. They got the red, black, and green Nagash shoes. They got t-shirts. They got all kind of stuff. And now they have a coffee bar. They have a coffee bar. And, of course, the vegan restaurant is next door. So if you're on Main Street in Lithonia, check them out, 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, right across the street from Soul Veg and Kitty Corner from the West End Mall, which is being gentrified. Yeah, so, I mean, it closed down, but it was going to do that anyway, the West End Mall. But Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, and the reason why I promote the Wadada is because they also have We Buy Black products, which I would, you know, which we talk about, the soaps and all kinds of good stuff. We Buy Black, so go to Wadada's. They also have Athletics, the brother that has the athletic wear with African themes on it, the Rebels, the Olmecs, the Dogon Starseed, the Moors, the Zulus, you know. So check them out. Check them out. They had roofs. Wadada's, located 878 Ralph David Abernathy. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as I like to say, family-centered economics. Of course, their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10 on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to make the call, which is 929-477-2789, you can go on to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. And their program, of course, is Dare to Win. blogtalkradio.com/ULU. L-U-L. So let me see here. Yes. I'm not sure how the program this Saturday went. My computer is down that I used to stream. Hope to be getting that out soon. So I'm not sure, but I hope that it had a good attendance. They deserve it. That's Baba Baruti and Sister Ya Baruti. Men's dealing with security, the women dealing with how we are sisters keeper. So I applaud them for continuing to educate our people, particularly our children. Akabin Institute, brothers and sisters, make your check money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use Cash App or PayPal, The dollar sign, YAYAMBARUTI, Baruti. And I would imagine I'm saying that because when I talked about the program this past weekend, they had a Yahoo for males and a Gmail for sisters to keep a recording separate of who all registered. And this one is different as well. So for Cash App. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia in the northeastern part of Haiti has been doing outstanding work in terms of helping our young people, providing education, health care, and sustainability, economic development. They have a chicken farm, vegetables, and so forth. And she truly deserves to be supportive. Brothers and sisters, go online to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash, Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Enye Sesim. The Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And, you know, as I said to you, a lot of times things I go over and make a decision on what we're going to talk about today. And today is miseducation, and here in the Enye Sesim, it's right there. I tell you, it's beautiful. Spirit of our ancestors, beautiful. May 3rd, be mindful of those teachers who insist on referring to themselves and their students as African Americans. They are generally not comfortable with being an African, and will define African American vehemently, claiming they are both. Ironically, you seldom see the African side of these individuals. Yah and Zinga. Most of us referred to these types as Negroes because of their loyalty is to the European nation first and to the African community last. They will see Europeans and the culture they have forced on the world as correct and the best that humanity has to offer. They could not live in a world without Europeans in charge. A world without a Caucasian presence is unimaginable to them. They have no interest in nation building unless that nation is the European one. Subintegration and interracialism leading to an eventual amalgamated assimilation into Caucasianness is their foremost aspiration. Anything that moves them away from their godlike masters is considered treasonous and attacked with all the energy at their disposal. They cannot imagine a reality where Africans are independently empowered. It is impossible for sub-integrationist, interracialistic, Eurocentric, multicultural orientated conservative Africans to pursue the interests of our community because they do not see themselves as Africans. By their very words and deeds, they admit that they believe we are incapable of executing the kind of nation-building responsibilities that an effective re-Africanization process would require. Affirm without qualification, I am African. Affirm without qualification, I am African. May 4th. Historically, the European system has encouraged the killings of Africans, and since Africans have been led to believe that they are part of the psychopathic system, they simply follow the practice. Dr. Bobby Eugene Wright. Bobby Wright. We just follow the practice because we think that we're part of this psychopath system because they encourage the killing of us. And so we do it. We have been doing it, and we're doing it now. And damn it, let's stop. As analyzed and coined by our warrior scholar, Dr. Amos Wilson, a great ancestor, Western culture is crimogenic culture, crime, crimogenic culture. Like any other culture, it inevitably and naturally reproduces itself, everything that flows from it. When its affected hand is forced by the non-European public because of a glaring contradiction arising from being caught behaving immorally or unethically while playing the moral and ethical judge of others. It only needs to explain away its abnormality as a problem of a few troubled individuals. But the need to hide behind this lie will only last a short time more, because if nothing changes, it is only a matter of time until an explanation of their criminality will become irrelevant. For once it successfully turns the world into itself, it will have both made the world inherently crimogenic and further moved itself into the position of being humanity's savior because of its greater experience in managing its own historic chronic criminality. Affirm, I will not harm Africans except for a just cause. Affirm, I will not harm Africans except for a just cause. The Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Let me play this right quick for everybody. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. That was Earth, Wind, and Fire. 1972, The Last Days in Time album, Mom, which I always felt was a more appropriate, not more, but just as equally appropriate Mother's Day song as well as the Intruders. I always love my mama, because I know we all do. But I'll be playing that Wednesday and, of course, on Friday, because this Sunday is Mother's Day. And to honor and respect motherhood is widely and vitally important. The education that we have been receiving is flawed and inaccurate. That's why when I talk about power, because people always use power, you know, and that's why I've always said the most definitive definition of power was Dr. Wade Noble's, because people talk about we must empower the people, you know, and knowledge is power, and education is power, information is power, voting is power, you know, and ain't none of that power. Ain't none of it. Power is the ability to define reality. And that's what Europeans have done. They define reality. They shaped it and fashioned it in their image and in their interests and imposed it upon others. In fact, the latter part of that quote is, power is the ability to define reality and then have others accept your definition as if it's their own. And we have truly accepted their definition. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in their reality? First, we were the soulless people, no culture to speak of, justifying our captivity, justifying our enslavement, justifying the brutality that it heaped upon us. Who are we in their reality today? Thugs, drug addicts, drug pushers, no fit fathers, no fit mothers, criminals. That's who we are in their reality today. And finding ways to eliminate us. Finding ways to eliminate us off the planet and truly off the continent of Africa, along with others, the Chinese and any damn body else. So we must understand what power is and what it isn't. And if we want to truly exercise power, then we need to educate ourselves. We need a different framework. As I said, when I'm going through stuff, I see a quote here that Baba Baruti posted by Nana Beaufort, Dr. Asa Hilliard, from the Saba book, The Reawakening of the African Mind. And that forward in the book was by Wade Nobles. There is something dreadfully wrong with an education socialization process that leaves us ignorant of our past, strangers to our people, apes of our oppressors, and creatures of habitual shallow thought and trivial values. Therefore, there must be an independent African effort to guarantee that our children and our communities develop the perspectives, purposes, skills, and the knowledge to function in ways that enhance our survival and our development. Ashe. It is our responsibility. It is ours. You know, one of my dear friends, and I've read him, in fact, I read him the other day, is Conrad Wuerl. And he now writes a column in the Crusader. You want to get it? ChicagoCrusader.com. ChicagoCrusader.com. And this was one from early last month. Education for What? That was a title of National Black United Front when I was a member of the National Black United Front. A conference, I think it was in East Lansing, if memory serves me correctly. The title was Education for What? And that's a good question. That's a very good question. That's a question that we need to ask ourselves. the education we received in this society for what? What does that education do for us? I just read you what Nana Balfour had to say about this education and what it does to us. And we should know just by observation and how we behave and the things that we do. And the fact that we as an African people at this day and time cannot think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us because the educational system, the miseducational system, trains us in that way. Education for what? Throughout most of our lives, African people in America have been told, if you get a good education, you get a good job. African people in Africa were told something similar. If you get a good education, your condition in life will improve. In the early part of the 20th century, until the late 1960s and early 1970s, the thrust was to encourage African people in America to at least get a high school diploma so they could be eligible for a job in a significant segment of the workforce. The explosions of the 1960s civil rights and the African power movements forced colleges and universities to admit Africans in America to their predominantly Caucasian colleges and universities in large numbers. Today, African people in America are encouraged to get a college education so they can get a good job. The education market has been saturated to that extent that a high school diploma of the 30s, 40s, 50s, or 60s, in most instances, has the same meaning as a college degree today. For real. That meaning is one of a college degree qualifying people to entry-level jobs in the U.S. labor market, except for those instances where people have been trained in specialized fields at the undergrad level. We have heard repeatedly today is that we must concentrate on African people in America's reading, writing, and math skills at the elementary and secondary level so they can compete for jobs that will be available in the U.S. multinational corporations in the 21st century, driven by the world of technology and computers. Many of our ancestors in the 18th and 19th and early 20th centuries who were concerned with the issues of education asked the question, education for what? It is quite clear that the major direction of U.S. educational policy has been to train and educate African people to work for Caucasian people. That is, to teach them to read, write, and compute so they can be prepared to work for them, so they can work for Caucasians. Work for Europeans. In a paper written by our great ancestor, Dr. Jacob Carruthers Babajetty, several years ago titled African Intellectuals and the Crises in African Education, he observed when the chattel system was destroyed by the Civil War, one of the first acts of the victors was to provide for African schooling on a wide scale. The Northern industrialists thought their philanthropic alter egos began finding and establishing African colleges. These colleges were intended to sit atop a Negro education system. See, as you know what I do, I substitute words, but I felt using that word was very appropriate. Further, Dr. Carruthers wrote, by the turn of the 20th century, even Southern Caucasians were making use of this African education system to facilitate the transition from the old chattel to the new, but equally effective system for African exploitation. Carruthers explained, the new system depended upon the cultivation of an African elite to serve as examples for the masses of Africans and to demonstrate the rewards of obedience. The rewards of obedience. The educated African elite, Carruthers points out, demonstrated time and time again that their ability to do what they had been trained to do. Eventually, a few of them were invited to manage the segregated colleges that were established and to train African teachers in this manner. A small educated Negro elite became overseers of the educational affairs of millions of African people. This model of education that continues today was established by the so-called leading Caucasian educators in this country who met at Lake Mohonk in New York, a resort area, on June 4th through 6th in 1890, and then the following year, of 1891 of June 3rd and 5th to read and discuss papers on what they officially called the Negro question. Again, Dr. Carruthers writes that at the end of the second conference, they had decided that the primary things that Africans had to be taught were morality and the dignity of labor. The dignity of labor, working for Caucasians. African people in the United States have a rich tradition of leaders who have taken issue with the Caucasian conceptualization of the mission of education for African people in America. David Walker, Henry Harlan Garnett, Henry McNeil Turner, Martin R. Delaney, and Edward Wilmot Blyden were 19th century advocates that believed the education of African people should be designed to assist us in doing for ourselves. In the 20th century, such leaders as Marcus Garvey, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, Elijah Muhammad, and Malcolm X all spoke and wrote consistently about the need for African people to develop an educational program aimed at developing African people to do for themselves, to do for self. In other words, we are still challenged today to create an education climate that inspires African youth in America to understand that the purpose of education is to develop the skills and historical understanding of the past as it relates to the present and future in preparing for working for self and the liberation of African people. This is the challenge of the 21st century, to defeat the 100-year tradition established by Caucasian educational leaders who created curricula for Africans in America designed to prepare them to work for Caucasians. Our esteemed ancestor, Dr. John Henry Clark, reminded us that history is the clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that they use to find themselves on the map of human geography. The role of history in the final analysis is to tell a people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most importantly, the role of history is to tell the people where they still must go and what they still must be. To me, the relationship of a people to their history is the same as the relationship of a child to his mother. The purpose of education must always be for us to do for ourselves. Dr. Conrad Wuerl, the quote by Dr. John Henry Clark, Ashe. We got some callers here. I'll take a call. 404-453. Good morning. All right. 404-573. Good morning. Good morning, Queen. How are you this morning? How are you?
I'm well today. I'm well.
Good.
Good to hear you. And be just listening.
Okay.
Education.
Okay. Well, if there's something that you want to say, you know what to do, okay?
That's fine.
Peace. 646-646. Good morning.
Hey, Archie, what's going on, good brother?
How you doing, Jay? Good.
I'm all right. How was your weekend?
It was fantastic. Not really. It was the same old, same old.
Good. Yeah. Listen, I got a quick question for you. I hope you don't take it the wrong way. Why do you take 25 to 30 of the first few minutes of the show for your introduction? It's so much teaching that needs to be done that maybe, you know, if you spent a little less time, just a little, get into your presentation, we could maybe have more time to get that knowledge and wisdom that you have, my good brother.
Well, I'm definitely not taking it the wrong way, but I understand what you're saying. I've been told that as well. But I guess for me, I do a libation, I do an intro music, a libation, and then I make these announcements, you know, of programs that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media and things that are going on, or programs that I feel, that I feel need to be talked about or highlighted, So I give those. And then, of course, the Enye Sesim, the day before, the day after, the day before and the day of, and sometime the day after, especially on Fridays. I'll read Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So when I come back for Monday, I just read Sunday and Monday. And then after that, that's about it. And then I get off into the discussion. You know, I understand what you're saying. I got 2 hours, you know, and I appreciate the 2 hours. And try definitely not to go beyond, especially on Monday and Wednesday, because Brother Franklin Jones, his program comes on immediately following this program.
Franklin Jones, what is his moniker? Is Franklin Jones the teacher or the educator or what is it? Wes is the researcher.
Yeah.
Wes
is the researcher. Well, Franklin Jones, you know, Franklin Jones, he has the Black People Matrix, you know. And,
the Matrix. Okay, I got you now. You know, it's funny you talk about the Matrix. You know, I never got into that movies. I never got into the Matrix. I don't know what it was, but I never got into it. And I have friends of mine who have spent great deal of time with the Matrix, who basically live by the Matrix and believe in it as the Holy Grail or whatever. But, you know, I don't know. I was never able to get into it. I've never been a big fan of Star Wars or
You don't like sci-fi? You don't like sci-fi?
No, I'm not into sci-fi at all, man. I've never been a big component. As a matter of fact, I've gotten away from movies and a lot of stuff because I'm sick of the interracial and the homosexual movement. I just saw a beautiful movie a month ago on Netflix called Uncorked. It was about wine.
Oh, yeah. I saw the advertising for that. How was that?
Oh, man, it was absolutely worth watching.
Really? Okay.
No integration and no homosexuality.
Is that right?
Oh, man, I was like so impressed by it, man. It just, you know, it just makes you feel good when you could see a story in regards to us as a people and whatever the dynamics are, and not having no integration or homosexuality in it, basically a family unit, man, it's a beautiful thing. It's nothing in the world better.
Yeah,
because
I agree with you.
Everything in regards to television, it got to have a monkey man or a twisted sister in it. That's just the reality. You're going to have the integrational, the swerving, the just utter nonsense. You know, I mean, at some point in time, you know, I know that's the agenda that they put forward thanks to Puff the Magic Negro Obama and his ilk. But the thing is, as a Black man, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to have to be entertained by it at all. You know what I mean? So the bottom line is this. We need to see authentic visions of ourselves as a people with whole intact families to basically, you know, move forward.
I agree because I'm tired of seeing it myself. And every other commercial or two, you see integration. And you may even see some homosexuality, a man with another man hugged up, whatever they're promoting. It could be anything. And that's what you're seeing nowadays, you know. And, you know, I'm like, but this is theirs. And that's what
it.
They
want. That's man's country.
It is.
That's what I keep on trying to tell them. It is theirs.
And so us complaining about it, just shut up and get your own. Because
there you go.
You know, they're going to continue to do what they want to do to maintain and sustain what they have established. And they're not going to radically change it to suit you at all. You've seen that. That's why I'm saying a lot of times we just don't understand and fail to recognize and look at the history. We keep thinking that somehow our suffering can that they have a moral nature, that we can appeal to them using moral persuasion, and that that will cause them to recognize that and change their ways and allow us to equitably be a part of this ugly, ugly, nasty ass system. And I'm saying to our people,
hey, Oshie, the Yorugu has no moral compass. Don't let nobody ever tell you that the Yorugu has a moral compass. He's the most wicked, evilest, diabolical, sickest thing on the planet. There's no one like him. Every day you see it with what they call POTUS of the United States of America. Every day you see this devil get on TV and address the nation. You're looking at pure, unadulterated ball of syphilitic pus, a disease-ridden devil. Right dab, smack dab in your face. What type of human being makes their face orange and then go in front of the public? Look, man, look, if we keep on following this beast, we doomed to get whatever we deserve from this beast. He just non-human, man. He's an alien.
Well, let me just say this. I don't look at the situation like that in terms of...
Oh, you don't?
No. Follow me, Jay. Follow me, Jay. In terms of whatever names, whatever adjectives, anything, I look at it analytically, scientifically, and historically, and with a rational understanding of that, based upon what our scholars and our researchers and our elders and our ancestors had to say about it. And so that's where I come from. So, you know, I don't know, I haven't said this in quite a while, but I don't give you my opinion on this program, because my opinion is profane. When I look at what has happened to us and continues to happen to us, it makes me want to holler, just like Nathan McCall's book, Make You Want to Holler, or Marvin Gaye, Make You Want to Holler, Throw Up Both Your Hands. But also, too, I'm trying my best to inform our brothers and sisters and give them information that would encourage them to do research, that encourage them to challenge themselves mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and to talk to other brothers and sisters in that way. Because to me, the only way that we're going to get up out of this, and that's what the program is today, miseducation, is develop an educational process where we begin to love ourselves, love who we are as African, love each other, be willing to trust one another, beginning to be willing to work with one another, begin to spend money with one another. And I ain't just talking about here, of course. I'm talking about globally. And truly, I'm talking about Africa. Because we cannot, if this program talks about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people, I ain't talking about here, because we cannot be sovereign here. There's some things we can do here and that we should do. But if you're talking about, you know, because you're talking about sovereignty, then you're talking about deciding for yourself everything that is going to happen with you on this land that they have stolen. Nobody can be sovereign. Not even the indigenous people, as you see. They just moved them again for some minerals that they found on some indigenous people's land. And the fact is, they're ill prepared to deal with COVID-19 on indigenous people's land, and will probably more than likely wipe a lot of them out. I ain't gonna say wipe out the whole relative nations, but no doubt that they will be deeply impacted. So that's where I come from, Jay. And I try to make myself...
No, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand clearly what you're saying, Coach. I mean,
well, I appreciate
it. And that's why I appreciate your knowledge and your wisdom and your presentation on what you do on these airways like no other, man. I mean, you know, the way that you present the information and what you're trying to give to us, very few have been able to do it. I hope that those out there listening learn from you, and I hope those that try to do shows learn from you in the direction of your years of experience has been able to get you to this point to where as you wanted the best.
Well, I appreciate that, but I don't know about that. But I'm sincere in my efforts. I'm dedicated.
And
I'm passionate.
Beauty, and that's the beauty of you, Oshie. That's the sincerity is what makes you who and what you are. Because you know the one thing about you, Brother Oshie? Nobody could ever say that Oshie is a phony and a fraud.
I hope not, Jack.
They can't say that about Oshie. Oshie is the real deal. And listen, man, ain't nothing wrong with that. I know this weekend you ate all that German chocolate cake. I know you finished it off.
Stop it, Jay. Don't give it up. You're right.
And, but listen, I don't blame you because I wish I was in Atlanta with you. And I'd help you out.
Believe me, brother. I wanted you too.
I just want to thank you. I really want to thank you for who and what you are, man, and for the experience of being able to listen to you. And this is real talk. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday when you on the air, because, you know, you're giving information, though. You're giving life-giving lessons to our people, and you're doing it with love, and you're doing it with true understanding of where we need to go as a people. And let's be very honest and let's be very clear. There's very few who's doing it the way you're doing it, brother.
Well, I appreciate that, Jay. And that's also why I do the opening the way that I do. I'm not saying I'm offering solutions, but I am. Because to me, I know it sounds contradictory, but the only solution for us is Pan-Africanism. Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. And so what I do in the opening, I mentioned these, like We Buy Black and African for the Africans. I'm trying to say, here, if you want to go to Africa to see for yourself, here, Dr. Renoko, here, Brother Bomani, Tahimba, you know, if you want to buy black, we got We Buy Black. If you want to support educational process or go to Ghana to see what the Kashi Project is doing, you have that opportunity and that ability. You know, here in Atlanta, there's places you can go and that'll help you. And of course, Dr. Mwalimu Baruti and what he is doing. I truly, wholeheartedly support Baba Baruti. He is genuine. He's trying to raise a warrior, scholars, warrior individuals. So because that's what we desperately need. So that's my part of what I'm trying to do, let alone providing information on various topics. You see, because I don't know it all. You know, there's a saying in the Hadith, the sayings of Prophet Muhammad. I know it is Ramadan for all the Muslims, and I know it's deep because Ramadan for Muslims is a communal kind of situation. And of course, and here they cannot be, you know, and I imagine maybe not even Saudi Arabia, because this virus is a pandemic. It is global, you know, but it says in a hadith, the sayings of Prophet Muhammad, it says, they who put their foot on the path to seeking knowledge, they go in the way of God until they return. That means they never return because God knows it all, but you don't. Nobody knows it all but God. And although I'm not a very religious person, but I truly believe in the spirit of divine, in the spirit of our ancestors. Like I said, there's topics I get, you know, and next thing I know, I see something related into the Inye Sesim, or I see a topic that I'm going to deal with. I see there's another article that I can, you know, glean from. So it happens that way, you know, and I hope it continues to happen that way so I can continue to inspire those who do listen. And I hope for those who do listen, Jay, that they will inspire others as well, you know.
Well, you're an inspiration, brother. All I can say is what you put forward, like I say, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday is something that the community need and something that our people need. And we're blessed to have you, brother. You know what I'm saying?
Jay.
But, Ochi, I wanted to ask you a quick question.
Sure.
Since they opened up Atlanta and that whole area there, what's going on with the virus, man? Has there been any increases?
Yes.
What's going on?
Yes. Yes, there has been. And there will continue to be.
So it seems like it was a mistake.
Oh, well, of course
it
was.
Because you're not hearing nothing on the national media in regards has there been an increase. I don't think they want that truth out there. But
well, let me say this.
What is the media saying?
Let me say this. It's happening across the country that they've opened up. They truly want to put profits over humans. And so opening up in various places across the country, and you're going to see a spike in those who are infected and unfortunately those who may pass, you know.
There has been a spike in Atlanta since they opened up?
Yes. But they're going to ignore that because what their feeling is that we'll get beyond that and so if a few people die. So if because what they're saying too, what's the percentage of people who get COVID-19 or coronavirus? The percentage of people dying is less than 2 or 3, 5%. So that means that if you get the virus, you'll be all right eventually, you know? So we got to go on with the business.
So basically, because I know in national media, they're not really saying anything. I'm not, I haven't really heard anybody really discuss what's going on there. But it's quite interesting that you're saying it. So is the local media like WAOK, are they reporting it or are they just being the good Negroes?
Well,
and not saying anything?
I'm not sure because I don't listen to them that often, number one.
Okay.
I mostly listen to them when I'm in my car. And I haven't been out. I haven't been out that much. If I do go out, it's just a short run and back to the crib, you know.
Right.
So, I used to listen to them on TuneIn, you know, but they're not on TuneIn.
What is the news media saying? Because
their approach is we report the news. This is what the governor said we are going to do. We report that. See how it's been. And I must admit, they have contacted some people who said unequivocally, no, we're not opening up. We're not ready. And some believe that because of the money that they got, it would be more advantageous for them to stay closed. Because if I open up and nobody comes, you know, I might as well have stayed closed.
There's a lot to that in regards to are they using that money to do what they're supposed to with that money so that they don't have to pay it back and entail may that be to whereas you have to open up. There's so much more to this than really is being said. And unfortunately, our people get caught up in it, and we the ones who basically perish and suffer from it because we really have no cultural recourse or collective recourse to even address it and deal with it like we should. And that's kind of what's really, to be honest, tragic in this whole situation. But look, man, I know you got to take your break, man. I just wanted to thank you, as always, for what you do and to encourage you to keep on, doing what you do. And, hey, listen, man, we got something to look forward to at 1 o'clock.
That's right. That's
the
right.
Matrix Jones, hopefully, he'll be on his game because, the Matrix is the Matrix, brother.
Yeah, that's
right. But listen, right. I'm going to get back to you later.
All right.
Because
all right.
Black man, keep in love, my brother.
Thanks, Jay. Jay's right. Thank you, Queen. And thank you, Ralph. And also, too, you too, Wes. And all the other brothers and sisters that listen and call in, Sister Susumi in Botswana. And, of course, Paul in the UK and many others. Appreciate it. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com
and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
self-destruction. It really ain't the rap audience that's bugging. It's one or two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid. So to crush that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause. The way we live is positive. We don't kill our relatives.
Pop, 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 when it's shot, who's to blame? Headlines, front page, and rap's the name. MC Delight here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time.
Took a brother's life with a knife. That is life. Cried because he died a trifling death when he left his very last breath. Was I slept, so watch your step. Back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gangbang? I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man, because that's
self-destruction.
Funky fresh dress to impress, ready to party. Money in your pocket, dying to move your body. To get inside, you pay the whole $10. Scotch tape with a razor blade, tape to your collar. Leave the guns in the crack and the knobs alone. MC Lights on the microphone. Bum rushing and pushing, snatching and taxing. I cram to understand why brothers don't be maxing. There's only one disco, they'll close one more. You ain't guarding the door, so what you got a gun for? Do you rob the rich and give to the poor? Yo, daddy-o, school him some more.
Just straight from the mouth. And daddy-o,
do a crime,
end up in jail, and gotta go.
Cause you could do crime and get paid today,
and tomorrow you're behind bars in the worst way.
Far from your family,
cause you're locked away.
Now tell me,
do you really think crime pays?
Speaking on taking what your brother had?
You little sucker,
you talking all that jazz.
It's time to stand together in a unity. Cause if not, then yo, we're soon to be self-destroyed, unemployed. D-rap race will be lost without a trace or a clue. But what to do is stop the violence and kick the science down the road that we call eternity, where knowledge is formed and you learn to be self-sufficient, independent. To teach the each is what rap intended, but society wants to invade. So do not walk this path that they laid. It's
self-destruction. Get ready for self-destruction. Self-destruction.
This is all about, no doubt, to stop violence. But first, let's have a moment of silence. Swing. Things have been stated, re-educated, evaluated. Thoughts of the past have faded. The only thing left is the memories of our belated. And I hate it when someone dies to get all hurt up for a silly gold chain by chump.
Word up.
It doesn't make you a big man. And to one and go and dish your brother, man. And you don't know that's part of the plan. Why? Because rap music is in full demand. Understand?
Self-destruction.
My name is Just Ice, a man, not a prankster. I was known as the gangster. But believe me, that is no fun. The time is now to unite everyone. You don't have to be soft to be for peace. Robbing and killing and murdering is
Hey, yo, here's the situation. Idiocy, nonsense, violence. Not a good policy, therefore, we must ignore. Fight and fuss it. Heaven's at the door, so there'll be no bum rushing. Let's get together because we're falling apart. I heard a brother shot another. It broke my heart. I don't understand the difficulty, people. Love your brother. Treat him as an equal. They call us animals. I don't agree with them. I'll prove them wrong. The right is what you're proving them. Take heed before I leave to what I'm saying. Or we'll all be on our knees praying.
Heavy deep. Deep in the heart of the matter, the self-destruction is served on a platter. Making a day, not failing to anticipate. They got greedy, so they fell for the bait. That makes them a victim, picked and plucked. New jack in jail, but to the vets, they're a duck. There's no one around, cause in jail, you're a number. They never took the time to wonder about
self-destruction.
To merge, we live for the love of our people, the hope to get along.
Yeah, so we did a song.
Getting a point to our brothers and sisters who don't know the time.
Boy, so we run around.
Instead of your heads, you know our job to build and collect ourselves with intellect.
Come on.
To revolve, to evolve the self-respect.
Cause we got to keep ourselves in check,
or else it's
self-destruction.
You are listening to Time For an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. The number one Black Talk Radio podcast in the world. And we're happy to be with Scotty Reed and Black Talk Radio Network and Brother Elliot at Time for an Awakening. Once again, talking about the miseducation of African people, I think it's vitally important that we understand and know it's by design. And unfortunately, the many of, as I read to you, what Baba Asa Hilliard said, our great ancestors, and what Conrad said in his piece that Conrad had on the Chicago Crusader. And go to the ChicagoCrusader.com and then click on commentaries and you'll find Brother Conrad's pieces and others too. But what Baba Jetty said, Dr. Jacob Carruthers, you know, clearly it's by design, attempt to mess with our mind. And so this article appeared in the Atlanta Black Star. I used to read from Atlanta Black Star consistently, Atlanta Black Star, Black Agenda Report, The Root, and many others. I would get a lot of information. Now it's has Africa, you know, a number of resources that I glean things from to bring to the attention of our people that I think is relevant, that and pertinent, and more importantly, informational and educational. So this piece here by a sister. What's the sister's name again? Yes, Nicole B. She is a professor of Africana Studies at Brooklyn, from Brooklyn, New York. And so this article says, teaching African power at a HCBU and the journey to undo the miseducation. This semester at a historically American African college, I taught a course on African liberation movements that in part examined how activism in Africa influenced African power across the globe. And most of the students in the class had not previously studied Africa and knew very little about the African power movement. After a few weeks, one student said that she was ashamed that she used to see Africa as one country with beautiful animals and textiles. Another realized that he had stereotyped an entire continent despite the fact that he was from Chicago. People stereotyped where I'm from all the time, he lamented. Even when my friends come to visit me, they ask me if they have to worry about getting shot when they walk outside. They don't seem to know that we have imaginations, we are creative, and have families who work hard. There's a lot going on in Chicago, and I realized that I was doing the same thing with Africa. Stereotype. Exposure to independent movements in places like the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ghana, Guinea, liberation struggles and wars in Angola, Mozambique, and Guinea-Bissau,
And the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, in the class readings and discussions, helped the students develop a global consciousness in thinking about racial, gender, and economic justice, and aiding them in understanding the nature of struggle and the legacies of racial and colonial oppression. It was beautiful and powerful to discuss these struggles at the institution so critical to the lives of African students and the larger community. An institution that struggles for funding and survival in a nation, in a national environment that is hostile to its existence and in a climate of corporatized university culture. Whether the students are and surrounding community will come first in this movement is an open question. You know the answer. We discussed the freedom dreams of movement's activists, as well as the critiques of colonialism and Caucasian, European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, better known as white supremacy. We read the work of Frantz Fanon, Asante, Emeka Cabral, Stephen Biko, Walter Rodney, Kwame Ture, and a host of others. Students' proclivity made connections between the past and the present, between conditions and place on the other side of the world and in their own hometowns. They talked about systems of oppression that have changed over time and that they've learned about people, some their age, and who challenged those systems. Within the first 2 weeks, one student asked, well, if colonialism and Caucasian extremism are so ingrained in the fabrics of society, doesn't that mean we have to reinvent the whole system? I love those types of questions. And my answer went something like this. Well, yes. How can we do that? How have people approached this in the past? How do they do so now? How do they do so now? Several of them planned to be educators. And they felt strongly that they wanted to start with the very young children by creating programs that challenged these ideals almost from birth. Others argued that we need a global movement and that it was more possible now than ever before because of social media. When another student realized that the Black Panthers were an anti-capitalist, she exclaimed in surprise. They wanted to bring down capitalism. What were they going to replace it with? I told them that the Panthers merged a number of ideologies, including revolutionary nationalism, Maoism, intercommunalism. I mentioned them that some of the authors we read argue that even our imaginations are colonized, which prevents us from thinking beyond the current system. I asked them if they could imagine a system that put African people ahead of profits. It was a challenge, but they were open to thinking about it, and you see that today. And of course, the European can't do that. He cannot put human beings ahead of profits. He cares less about human beings. The discussion of African power were often complicated because activists approached African self-determination from different perspectives, and because sometimes people think that African power is anti-Caucasian rather than anti-Caucasian extremism. Interestingly, sometimes students think all activists were extremists rather than recognizing African power has a strategy for African liberation and a response to extreme conditions. In particular, we discussed their focus on the most marginalized, self-determination, self-defense, the critique of capitalism, the goal of removing the spiritual and the cultural cancer of Eurocentrism, the analysis and exposure of state-sanctioned violence and connections to the third world liberation struggle. One of my sadder moments during the class, an American-African male military student responded to the reading by saying, "This guy seems very angry about colonialism, but without it, none of us would be here today." I suggested that some people also say the same thing about our captivity. And he shrugged, responding, yeah, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that. We should be thankful. What kind of education had this student experienced that kept his ideology intact and unquestioned. He had experienced at least 16 years of school, and his college may be his last stop for formal education. His debates with his peers and with me helped him start to recognize the structural conditions that African people are facing worldwide and the problems inherent in a system which is embedded in exploitation. I came to enjoy listening to how he made sense of the material he was reading and the things that stood out to him. As an educator, I consistently think about exposing students to ways activists challenged deeply structural and seemingly intractable conditions in the past. I pushed them to imagine beyond what we see now, to develop a vision for a world and to engage in struggle for a betterment and more just future through whatever approaches make sense for them. ACBUs are powerful vehicles for this possibility. I have never had a body of students that connected so clearly and directly to the information I was teaching. On this historically African campus, infrastructure seams and funding are deep and significant challenges. The lack of access to basic resources for teaching and learning speaks to the economic disinvestment and organized abandonment faced by many institutions. The digital divide is real. The politics of survival are serious. Sometimes things just don't work and no one knows why. In some circles, Eurocentrism still rules in teaching despite efforts to change the curriculum. Some persons who are not necessarily committed to African students, much less to African liberation, hold key positions. Some of the Caucasian professors complain incessantly about students who don't read, who don't belong in college, or who are generally subpar. For some, it is a response to feeling unable to inspire students who often are under siege in their lives regarding others. I wonder why and how they found themselves teaching on this campus, on grounds that they are beyond scared, where people laid their lives down on the line so that these students could have a chance for life. In this time, I also... Close. Oh, man, you've got to be kidding. Okay, thank you. Many people don't realize. Something happened to the computer. In this mire, I also encourage professors of all cultures who would go to the ends of the earth for students, who see this work as part of a larger project of social justice, who have vision and courage that defy their age or confine their wisdom. They have challenged me to step up my game and to rise to the occasion myself. And compared to predominantly Caucasian institutions, PWIs, where the administration struggled to hire talented American African PhDs, an abundance of American African people with doctorates exists here. People who excel in the fields despite the lack of support and the colonial-less situations. Many people don't realize that some HBCUs were not founded by African people, nor were they based on a mission of self-determination. Sometimes they were founded in the conditions more similar to colonial missionaries' educational initiatives in the Caribbean and in Africa. People of African descent took on these institutions and some worked to decolonize them, while others worked to model them after Caucasian institutions. I have a newfound respect for those who fight the good fight at these institutions, who are developing our next generation of African doctors, teachers, community organizers. And my computer just went out. Well, anyway, you get the picture. You get the picture. You know what's important for us. Last year, an image circulated on Facebook of a young woman sporting a natural hair cut, walking past a graffiti wall. Always remember, the university belongs to us. It was an image from South Africa taken in the midst of the Fees Must Fall movement. Fees Must Fall and sister movements declared to the world that she was saying that South Africa, these problems are real. These problems are real. And the problem for us, of course, is we think that Europeans are going to save us. We think the society is going to save us. We put so much hope. We put so much energy in believing that this, as I read to you earlier, that this is the model, that what Europeans do is what to be admired and respected. They are the ones that bring forth ideas in the world. They are the ones that do this, that, and the other, so they want you to believe. Our problem is that we believe it. And so as a consequence, it has a bad situation, it leads to a bad situation for us. But see, the entrapment of America is the idea of individualism. The idea, that's why you have these protests. This, you're telling we can't go outside because we may spread this thing and get people. No, man, we have a right. We have an individual right and a liberty to protest and to be out here and go outside whenever we want to. We can do whatever we want to. We're individuals. We don't follow any dictates of anybody. This is the mindset of the European. And any now seeing what's happening, any rational mind will say to you, this is not the thing to do at this time. Because this virus and this illness is not under control. And to me, I'm not saying that when there's nobody getting infected and there's nobody dying, that's when you open. What I'm saying is when you have the ability to test any and everybody that you can, and when you have the ability to isolate them to make sure that nobody else can get infected, then that's probably what you can do. Because to open and then everybody's going in wearing a mask and gloves and you sitting here by yourself and, you know, 6 feet to 10 feet in a radius, there's nobody else there. You know, believe me, I am not one to talk about going back to business as usual. I didn't like the business back then that was usual. And I sure in the hell ain't going to like the business coming up that could be usual. I'm radical. I say at this time, when you consider what's going on, there should be a fundamental change in the process of this country and the world. A world where greed is not the deal. A world where working with the environment, a world where working with human beings, there's a belief that there are too many people on the planet. And there's two people that have been espousing that. One particularly, which is Bill Gates, who is the biggest ardent person for implementing vaccines. But there are those who are arguing against vaccines. What's in the vaccine? What's in there? I don't know. Exactly. And once again, given the history of this country and of Europeans, if they say you must have a vaccine, because for many of the doctors who espouse this, and I understand this, they're saying everybody must be vaccinated, because if everybody is not vaccinated, those who are not, they have a possibility of infecting others. So everybody must be vaccinated. It's the only way that we can be sure. And then here you have some African countries, some willing, after what the French, after what these two French doctors said, well, yeah, we got a vaccine we can try out. Let's try them out on Africans. just like they tried the syphilis test out on us and any other kind of experiment. Yeah, let's try them out on Africans. They're most disposable. So when you consider all of these things, there is no thing more important to us than education. The right kind. Malcolm said, education is our passport to the future. For tomorrow belongs to those who prepare for it today. But what Malcolm was saying, he wasn't talking about the public school education that we've been receiving or a parochial school education. He wasn't talking about education that is dominated by Europeans. He was talking about education for self. Education that gives you the knowledge of who you are historically and culturally. Education that fortifies you, gives you the confidence to go out there to be who you are and feel good about yourself. And knowing that you can compete with anybody, even in a messed up, discriminatory, selfish, greedy system like this. But I don't want us to compete in this. I don't give a damn about this. Our competition should be with each other over there. And making sure that when we go over there, we don't go there like we did with the Negro pen mindset in Liberia, which has still affected that country today. That somehow we were better because we have been exposed to the European for 300 years. And some of us, our skin tones and our features are different than what those Africans are. And somehow that made us better. Once again, Malcolm said, I reject the racist blood that flows in my veins. I look the way I do because of my mother and my father, who I never met. But I know who I am. I love my mother. In fact, that song I played, I'm going to play it again Wednesday, and of course on Friday, Earth, Wind, and Fire's Mom. I remember, because it was one of the first few albums I had before I got ripped off at this place that I had. And I had remember Sansui? I had a Sansui, man. And it was a speaker. I can't remember what the turntable was and the speakers. But anyway. Got ripped off. But that album was always special. Last Days in Time. You know, great cuts off that album. Even the album before that. But, this is a tough situation for us. Let me see if I can get Jay. I got a couple more minutes in here. 404-453. Wes, are you there? Or you just hang up the phone, huh? Okay. All right. Wes is doing some research. Yeah, he's out doing some research. And I don't blame him. Everything needs to be researched, and you got to look at where you get your information. You know, who's the author of it? What is their history? There's no doubt about it. We have been and continue to be miseducated. And the belief is that this educational system is fair for everybody. And if we don't measure up, it's our fault. Because it's there for everybody. It's not just, it's not a white system. It's a neutral system. It's a fair system. It is a meritocracy. It's a meritocracy. It's by your own merits do you do well. And, of course, the instructors are all objective. And they give grades out depending upon how well you do. There is no bias, no prejudice. We don't discriminate. It's fair for everybody. Yeah, right. I tell you, I really would love for us as African people to look at this situation for truly what it is and reject it. Reject that system. 447-447, good afternoon.
Yeah. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening to anybody listening. How are you, Brother Ochi?
I am doing well, Paul. How are you, man?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I'm doing fine. Still have air in my lungs, still can breathe, so I'm alive.
I know, that's right. Got to test those lungs. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I want to bring this to your attention. Yeah. You know, the police organization, the Metropolitan Police, don't wear masks.
What do you mean? You say the police in London. In London. Oh, the bobbies. The bobbies don't wear masks? Really?
None of them. Nowhere in England do they wear masks.
Wow. Okay.
Don't you find that a bit strange?
Yes, definitely do. I definitely find that a bit strange because everyone would agree that that's one of the possible ways, truly one of the possible ways of transmission, especially if you come in contact, and I don't mean physical contact, but within a space of somebody who does not have a mask on, you know, and you don't have a mask on, and never know what could happen right away. You know, so yeah, man, yeah, well, I do, because I know here, it's mandatory. I can't speak. Well, let me say it this way. I've seen it here in Atlanta. I can't speak for other places. I haven't been all over, but I would make the assumption that that's what they're advocating. So I would assume that everybody has a mask on. All first responders. All EMTs, all, you know, care workers have a mask on for their protection as well as the people they serve. Yep.
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, I would assume the same. But yesterday I took the liberty to ask one police officer in London, why are you not wearing masks? Why don't you wear a mask? And you know what he told me? He said to me that they had been advised by the WHO that wearing a mask is more counterproductive, more dangerous to you than the virus. That's what he said to me. Can you believe that? That's what he said.
Okay, but what was
one of them?
What was the rationale? Why?
Well, that's what he said. He said they'd been advised. I, you know, one of the arguments people keep saying that, you know, people, you can call it a conspiracy theory, but it's a fact that none of the police are wearing masks in this country. Yeah, now. He, you know, I just, because I've been hearing this argument, and it's true. You can see none of them. They sit in vans together. You've got a thing called special patrol group where they go around in vans together, mm-hmm. and none of them wear masks. So I just thought, well, it'd be interesting to ask why. And that's mm-hmm. what he told me. He said the WHO advised them, they had advice from the WHO, that wearing a mask is actually more detrimental to your health than catching the virus. That's what he said.
I don't understand that. Because understand, Paul, they had said that you don't need to wear a mask early on, some months ago, mm-hmm. back in March and so forth. They said you don't need to wear a mask when you go out. But if you have a cold or sneezing or something like the allergies, you should wear a mask. See, they were saying that initially.
Yeah.
So those, if they say, if you're healthy, you feel okay, you don't need a mask. But if you have a cold or you may have some symptoms and you're sneezing or coughing, you should wear a mask. And now, of course, the recommendation is everybody wears a mask. You know, yeah, they have approved masks.
No, I absolutely agree. But I'm just saying, it's just strange to me why the police still today don't wear masks. And the other thing is this. Have you ever heard of an organization? I'm just trying to look for the name, but it's abbreviated ICTV. Have you ever heard of this organization? The acronym is ICTV.
No. ICTV, see, no.
There's two organizations. You've heard of the WHO, haven't you?
Of course.
Well, see, that's the other organization which you don't hear about. The ICTV is, and I'm just looking for the name of the organization. See, on a particular date, there was the two organizations was involved in naming this virus and defining what it was. And one of them was the ICTV. The other major organization was the WHO. And I kind of recognize that you wouldn't know that, because I didn't even know about this organization called the ICTV. But they're based in London, basically. So this organization was responsible for defining what this coronavirus is. And the WHO, on the same day, was responsible for giving it a name, COVID-19. So you said earlier on, it's time for us to do our research. And anybody can go on the WHO website and you can read this. Just go on the website and read. And it will tell you, we named this virus on this particular day, SARS-2, because that's the actual name of the virus, SARS-CoV, COVID-19. They tell you that. So what I'm saying is that the point I'm trying to make is what exactly is going on and what exactly is out there? Because my logical, putting my detective hat on, it just seems strange to me that Her Majesty's police force are not wearing masks, none of them. And to ask him, and he for him to tell me that the WHO has advised them. Listen, what I'm trying to say is we need to look into this thing more deeper and stop following these narratives.
Well, let me just say this.
Whatever is out there, right, is not the same. It's not just this one thing. You know, it's not just this, what they're telling us it is. It's just not. And listen, I want to put it out there. I just want to put this out there for the listeners and anybody else who's paying attention to this, yeah? You don't have to be an expert to use your intellect or intelligence. I just want to repeat that. You don't have to be an expert to use intellect, intelligence, or due diligence. No, you don't. Because the point in going to school is that you can use your own mind and think for yourself, not that you can regurgitate things what people tell you. I have a background in law. One of the things you realize when you work in law, you have an expert on bloody every subject in the world, yeah? And usually when you go to court, you get an expert for one thing,
right,
and you get an expert who opposes it and says something
exactly
different, yeah?
Exactly.
And usually you find something in between. And you know the job of the judge is to use his intellect, intelligence, and his experience to define where the truth is, yeah?
That's right.
So that means he's not the expert. So let me just put it out there again. You do not have to be an expert to get to the truth. What you need is intelligence, due diligence, and observation. That's what you need. And you have to be able to think outside the box, brother.
And also, Paul, you must have a will to do it. You must really want to do it. You must, you know, wherever that information is, you seek it out. And then you weigh it based upon your intelligence, based upon your experiences, based upon what you know. So no, nobody has. You don't have to be an expert. What does that mean to be an expert anyway? Because somebody has given you a certificate, or you have gone to the school and you got these certificates, these degrees, and so forth. I mean, there's a bunch of people who could be classified as a damn fool. I mean, look at Ben Carson. He's a brain surgeon. He's a brain surgeon.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look at Dr. Sebi. Sebi. Okay, a man who went before the U.S. authorities, the only man to prove he could cure cancer. And this is a man who claims he's not that educated, all right? So when I hear this nonsense about you have to listen to the experts, no, you don't. You have to use your own intelligence, your due diligence, and you have to read between the lines. So let me give you the name of this committee, It's called the International Committee on Toxicology of Viruses. Now, that was the second organization outside the WHO who had a role in defining and naming this virus. And I think people should look into them. I think you should look into these organizations and find out what role they exactly play. They're based right here in London.
Okay. Yeah?
And who? And also the other thing to look into is who is running this WHO? Who are the players? And I tell you, when you start to look into these people, you're going to realize a lot of things are not what these governments are saying, because these governments, they do not understand what a virus is. They don't.
Well, let me get
the experts, or they're not involved in naming these things and pushing these agendas around the world.
Well, listen, let me take this call right here. Just hold on, Paul. 267. Good afternoon.
Greetings, Brother Oshi and Brother Paul. It's just Sister Sumi here.
Sister Sumi, how are you? It's great that you called. How have you been?
I'm doing well, doing well.
Good.
Well, and it's good to jump in here for a minute. I had to because, you know, anytime I hear a different opinion such as that my Brother Paul here brings, I think, couldn't help it. Chime in and just say, you know, Brother Oshi, I have an aunt who's a nurse in England, somewhere in the UK, I won't say exactly where. And she told me just, I think about a month ago, in the hospital, they were not wearing masks except in the coronavirus ward. Only in the coronavirus ward. And she's doing fine. I mean, you know, they're not aware of anything major that has happened, but they were not wearing masks in the hospital while they were working there. I wanted to just throw that in there. But the other thing is my observation of what's going on right here in Botswana, Brother Ocean, Brother Paul, I think our people are more likely to die being under what I call house arrest. They call it lockdown, house arrest, and martial law, which is what Botswana is doing, than dying from any virus. I mean, we've always had viruses and bacteria and all types of things, but I'll tell you what, the worst thing you can do to a human body is render it incapable of fighting any type of attack from any pathogens. And I think being isolated, being housebound, not being able to get out and get some sun, and not being able to continue with your normal activities is more likely to kill you than any virus. The other thing is the economic effect. A lot of these people are not only under house arrest, as I call it, they've also lost their income. A lot of them work for themselves because everybody encouraged them to do that. That was the right thing to do. You didn't want to depend on the government or, you know, become a burden on the family. They were the first people to lose their income.
Yeah.
So now, you know, when you compound the fact that you're under this house arrest and you have no income, that's a setup for an extermination of the people. The good thing in the village, I'll tell you what, Brother Oshi, these people are not playing around. You know, it's a little over a month now that we've been under this lockdown. And, you know, people are getting out and doing stuff. Some people are building because the husband, wife, and children are doing it themselves. They have started saying everybody should wear a mask. I've seen, you know, individuals are going around with a mask on. But other than that, I think there's some ulterior motive that's going to kill us quicker than any virus. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay. I hear you. Well, I'm running out of time. Paul, you want to... Got any quick closing comment?
Well, Brother Ochi, you know, thank you. And good, you know, it's nice to hear from Sister Sumi. Look, I just want to say this, Brother Ochi. Look, we have to start following the narrative and look into everything and research and investigate absolutely everything. I think the indigenous Americans say the white man speaks with forked tongues. Take care.
All right. You're right. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you, Sister Sumi. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Brother Paul.
All right. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace
Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. And we will be victorious. Brothers and sisters, I hope you'll be back here with me on Wednesday as we continue to work on the African mind. Peace, family.